to Eid Zomer. Okay, and we have this fascinating concept in halacha of kind of poetic justice. Right, two false witnesses malign somebody. They try to get an innocent man punished in some way. Mita, or lashes, or a monetary payment. And we say when we catch them and discover they're lying, poetic justice, they get the very punishment they went to inflict upon the victim. Okay, that is the famous concept of Eid Zomer. We have to figure out when that applies. Now, I want to give you a little bit of like methodological background. You know, when I was in Rav Lichtenstein's Atzal Shir, he used to say there are three questions to ask. Okay, I'll do it in Hebrew first, then we'll go to English. Say about any concept. You could ask about the makar, the ofi, and the hekef. Okay, let's go to English here. The makar would be?
The
source. You might say, what's the biblical source for an idea? What's the drasha? Okay, that could be telic. Then, what's the ofi of something? Vega, who said that? Excellent, Mark, how do you know that word?
That's Hebrew.
Okay, see, guys, everyone should have taken the Bechini Yerushalmi and Hafter. Okay, if you had done that, you'd be Russell Charnoff right now. Okay, or Mark. Okay, so the Ophi is the character, the nature of the din. Okay, in this context, I'll say not just the nature, but like, what's the rationale for the din? So the source is one question. The nature or rationale is a second question. And the Hekef?
The perimeter.
Okay. All right, here we go. We got our local Israeli here. Okay, the missing fifth beetle. Here he is. Okay. Okay. Okay, so, and the scope, when does it apply, when does it not apply? Now, if you think of those three questions are obviously going to be related to each other. When I know the source for an idea, or the rationale for an idea, that should impact on the scope of the idea. Okay, so we're going to put all three together here. We're going to see a particular halacha regarding Ein Zomeim, ask where this halacha come from, what's the drasha that justifies it, ask what's the nature or rationale of this halacha, then ask where this halacha applies. Okay, so let us go to the first Mishnah in Makom. Okay, so one question is, when does the halacha apply? Like, when is the crime done? So not every attempted crime is a crime. When does we say the crime is locked in and you get punished? So says the Mishnah in Mako, Eina Eidim Zomin Neragin at Chiyigmar Hadin. So when is their crime done, as it were? When? There was a ruling. There was a verdict, right? If they were caught before the verdict, they didn't finalize the crime. It's like your gun jammed. You didn't finalize the crime. If there was a verdict, then the crime was done. So if there was a verdict that the innocent man was going to be killed and then we catch them, we will put the Eidim Zomim to death. Okay, great. Now, this is a famous debate among sectarian groups. Like, the Tztukim did not agree. Sharei Tztukim Omrim Achi Harek Shenemar Nefesh Tacha Nefesh. What did Tztukim say? It's only after the crime's not done when there's a verdict. The crime is done when he's dead. Okay, but we don't say that. Now, not only that, but we go one step further. Amulim Chachamim V'lo Kvar Nemar V'asitim Lo Kasher Zemam Lasot Lachiv V'arachiv Kaya. Okay, so what's the claim? What do we say, actually? Exactly. Kasher Zama means what they intended to do, but not what they actually accomplished. Okay, so this is surprising, one of the two most famous surprises of the Eid Zomer, that we say if we got them before the verdict is carried out, we apply the punishment of Hazama. We give them what they wanted to give to the victim. If we catch them too late, after the verdict is ready to carry out, we say we do not give them the punishment. Now, clearly, there's something a little counterintuitive about that. You'd say, surely it's a worse act when we actually succeeded. And you'd want to punish them more when someone innocent suffered. And here we're saying, when we caught them in time, we don't punish. When we catch them too late, when we caught them in time, we do punish. The Eidim Zomim, we caught them too late, we do not. Okay, so we're going to ask again the three questions. This is the halakha, guys, colloquially called Kasher Zamam Velo Kasher Asa, as they intended, but not as they actually did or accomplished. What's the source of Kasher Zamam Velo Kasher Asa? What's the rationale for it? And what is the scope? Okay, welcome to that so far? Okay, excellent. All right, so we're going to go a little out of order, if you don't mind. Let's start with the scope question. Okay, so let's jump to the Rambam, bottom source here. As always, the Rambam makes life exciting. Okay, says the Rambam, Nerag zeshi idu ala v'akach huzmo. If we kill them first and then there's hazama, eina neragin min hadin. We don't kill them, that's exactly what we saw, right? We say, kasher zaman v'lo kasher asa. Shinema kasher zaman l'asa v'adayim l'asa. Okay, v'davar zeh mipi ha-kabbalah. Okay, when the Rambam quotes mipi ha-kabbalah, what does he mean? What does the Rambam mean when he says mipi ha-kabbalah? Okay, Nimrod is so yeshivish, guys, he can make rabbinic jokes. Okay, what does it really mean? It means tradition. Okay, when the Rambam says kabbalah, it means tradition. It doesn't mean, you know, Kabbalistic literature. Okay, this is known from tradition. Aval imlaka zeh she'idu alav. What if we already gave lashes? V'chein im yotza ha-mamon miyad zeh liyad zeh beidutan. Or we already administered the monetary payment, Chozer levalav umeshamalo. So what did the Rambam just tell me about the scope? This whole principle of kasher zaman below kasher asa is only true for death penalty crimes. It is not true for lashes. It's not true for monetary payments. In both those cases, even if we already administered the punishment, we would still apply Adam Zoman. Obviously, what's the million-dollar question now? What's the logic for that distinction? Why would someone say this is true for death, but not true for lashes or for monetary payments? And notice in terms of the three things I set up, we could try to solve this by focusing on the drusha. Maybe the drusha source will be telling. We could try to solve it by focusing on the rationale. Right? Is there a drusha reason to differentiate? Is there a rationale reason to differentiate? Okay, all good so far? Okay, now the Rambam had a famous critic, okay, who lived in Provence in southern France, Rabbi Avin ben David. He wrote little criticisms all over his copy of the Mishnah Torah, which in almost every Mishnah Torah today, they're published. Okay, in fact, if you don't mind, I will even indulge in my classic joke about this. Okay, this is the Rambam's introduction to Mishnah Torah. Notice there are already comments of the writer. So he's even criticizing the introduction. So I have this dream, and it hasn't happened yet, but I dream it's going to happen once in Jewish history. You know, in a lot of rabbinic books, there's like this title page, the gateway in the front. I'm waiting for someone to write a little criticism in the bottom, like, you used the wrong picture. Like, that's not the right gate. But that has not yet happened, but it'll happen eventually. Okay, so what is the Rambam's critic, the Ravid says here. So it says the Ravid, Amr Avram, Shibush Huzeh. What's a Shibush? It's a mistake. It's an error. Okay, so the Ravid says this can't be. Now, the Ravid doesn't spell out his position, but what does it sound like? He doesn't think there's a good basis for differentiating between death and another thing, everything else. So I think, can we come up with a rationale to defend our friend the Rambam? Yeah?
Yeah, nobody else is just saying it's a mistake with our own
knowledge. Excellent, Jordan's there. Excellent, we'll get there in 1 second. Okay, now Jordan said maybe you could draw the line differently. Where's the Rambam's line? Mita on one side of the divide, Malkot and Mamon on the other side of the divide. Jordan says maybe the divide should be Mita and Malkot on one side of the divide, and Mamon on the other. So let us go back to the previous page. And here Tosus has a great svar. Okay, there's a Tosus in Baba Kama discussing Adam Zoman. Okay, says Tosfot, Adam Zoman, Pirish Riva, Dafilu Shilem Api Adam Zoman, even if you actually paid, Chayavit, the Adam Zoman still have to pay. Why? Delo Shayach, the Mamon Kasher, the Mamon Kasher Sa, the Efshar Bechazara. What does Tosfot say, guys? Exactly. There's a finality to death. There's no finality to money. Right? Meaning, I rephrase the point, even if there is a principle Kasher, Zaman, Delo Kasher Asa, when it comes to money, you never reach the moment of kasher asa. What do you mean? You gave them, okay, give the money back, and then it turns out you didn't do it. But you can't give the life back, obviously. Where would, according to the Sfar, where would Malka fit in?
With death.
With death, yeah, you can't undo lashes. It's true, it's not, it doesn't have the same finality as death, right? But it's pretty, you can't undo it, I can't call for a do-over on Malka, right? So at that point, Jordan Stab is right. We do have a good Sfar, can you guys want to, guys? We have a great Sfar to differentiate between Mamon on one side divide, and Malko to meet on the other. There is a principle, kasher zaman below kasher asa. It doesn't apply to money because there's no such thing as finality in money. Okay, but if the Ravid was doing something different, sorry, if the Rambam was saying that the dividing line is mita versus Malko to Mamon, that we still don't have a svar for. So we have one kind of svar to differentiate, and we're looking for another svar for the Rambam. Yes, Yakir.
Assume that he can't pay it back in money, meaning that happened and he wasn't able to pay back. And then he'd have to be, I guess, a slave. Does that make sense? If he doesn't have any money, he has to be a slave to the...
Meaning you think if the Adam Zoman done, or if the guy already paid...
The Adam Zoman, meaning they'd have to do, like, they have to do the chazer, they have to go back on the...
Look, there is a question in general, what happens when someone can't meet their financial obligations, but in theory, the debt is there. The financial obligation's in place.
Right, but then after then you do that, then if you can't pay it back, and you're turning it into, it's not just a monetary case, it's just, now it's an evet. That's a different, that's kind of...
Look, you might be, because you're Malkot, right? This whole question of how Avdut and Zomim play out with each other, yeah, when you have cash or not, right? So I just recommend that you learn Betim and Bet again. Okay? Yeah.
So
that was a criticism, just that's where the question is discussed. Yeah.
Would the Zomim have to pay back not just the money, but any losses incurred that were a result of him not having money of one of the...
I don't think so. Yeah.
Because, like, for example, if you needed that money...
I understand what you're saying, but I think halacha does not take that into consideration.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, Ben.
Well, I think as a response to you here, I'm not sure that the question of what if he doesn't have the money to pay back is practical, because he was just given the money.
Right. I think also, I'm not sure if Yakir was talking about like the recipient of the original payment can't pay back, or the Mzoman can't pay. I'm not sure where he was going, but either way, I'm gonna leave it aside for now.
But either way, we're talking about if the money has already been paid. So if the money has been paid to him, he's got to have the money to pay back.
If the money's already been paid to him. Okay, say that. I'm good. I think it's going to distract us, Ben. I think it's going to distract us. Okay, everyone good with that? Can we move on? Okay, let's go back to the opening Gemara in Makot. Back to the opening Gemara in Makot. Okay, so we're still searching for help for our friend the Rambam. Can we have Jordan established for Tosfot? We're going to try to help the Rambam out here. Just to give you like a third possible position, let's go to the Shita Mekubetzet in Baba Kama. Oh, I just realized something. Okay, this is a unique source sheet. All right, this would be like a great trivia question. Okay. Should I ask it? No one's going to get it. But I'm asking anyway. Okay. What is unique about the geographic location of several authors on this source sheet? There's some commonality.
France.
Okay, very unusual commonality of several authors on this source sheet. Yeah, they all look like foot slides. Okay, actually, it's not true. Yosef Kari did not. Okay, three of the people on the source sheet lived in? Egypt. Very good. Okay, not so many source sheets where that happens. Okay, the Rambam, of course, lived in Egypt. Okay, the Radbaz, Rav David ibn Zivil, lived in Egypt. And the person who compiled the Shita Mekubetzet was a man named Rabbi Tzal Ashkenazi, who also lived in Egypt. Okay, so I don't know if this has happened before. Okay, three Egyptian rabbis on the source sheet. Okay? No, what is the Shita Mekubetzet, by the way? What is the Shita Mekubetzet? Okay, so think about it, guys. Before there was printing, it was hard to have access to manuscripts. People didn't have the Rishonim. So Manny Rabbi Tzal Ashkenazi collected all the Rishonim in one work so people would have access to it. Think about the phrase, right? Shita Mekubetzet, right? He is doing a kibbutz. He is gathering together various positions. Okay, so in certain masechta, it's very helpful to have the Shita Mekubetzet. Okay, what does he say in Baba Kama? Adam Zoman, Bedavka, Kishuz Mova, Dino Shilem, Yishuvilav, Sheim Shilem, if the victim already paid, Lo Mechayev. What does he think? The principle Kasher Zaman Velo Kasher Asa applies to money. So now, guys, we have a great debate. We have three positions on the board. If you hold like the Rambam, when does this halacha apply? Kasher Zaman Velo Kasher Asa? If you're the Rambam, only death. If you're like Tosfot from Baba Kama, when does it apply? Death plus Malko. If you like the Shita Mekubetzet and Baba Kama, all three across the board. Okay, now we figure out what's the rationale for that debate. Wonderful. Okay, let's go back to the first source now. Okay, let us look at the Gemara. Okay, so we're in the first source, in the not in the Mishnah part, not in the Gemara part. Tani Baribi Omer, Lo Hargo, if we didn't put the victim to death, the defendant, Neragid, we kill the Adam Zoman. Hargo, but if we did kill the victim, Neragid. Amrav, his dad said to him, Bini, Lav Kal V'Chomer Hu. That doesn't make any sense. Surely we could kill the Adam Zoman based on a very simple Kal V'Chomer. If when they're not successful, they're put to death, all the more so, when they are successful. Okay, does, what? I'm sorry, look at his answer. Okay, Amar Lo Limartene Rabbeinu, She'ein Onshin Min Hadin. This is a fascinating principle worthy of its own shikoli. We're not willing to give Kal V'Chomers, not give punishments, based on a Kal V'Chomer. Min Hadin here is a technical term that means a Kal V'Chomer. We will not give a punishment based on a Kal V'Chomer. Can you give me a potential svar for that? Why I won't give a punishment based on a Kal V'Chomer? Why not? Kal V'Chomers are pretty basic. Arguably the most basic form of logic in humanity. If A, all the more so B. Even if you're not a rabbinic Jew, you could probably say Kal V'Chomers naturally. Yeah? Okay, so good. Very good. In our cast. So there, one svara says that we're not confident about human logic. We have a certain amount of confidence in human logic, but it stops at some point. Where does our confidence stop? If you're going to give somebody corporeal punishment, all of a sudden, we're not so confident. It's not that we throw out human logic altogether. Obviously, we have Kal V'Chomers all over the halachic system. But maybe that stops short of actually giving somebody lashes. That stops short of actually putting someone to death. That, we want something explicit. We're not going to do that based on a Kal V'Chomer. That's an excellent story in our cast. Since somebody showed it. Yeah, Moshe.
Doesn't that undermine the court system entirely if you're going to kill someone based on a Kal V'Chomer?
Why?
Because then you don't even need a two-witness law.
No, let me clarify. Okay. It doesn't mean the Kal V'Chomer is evidence. Okay, the Kal V'Chomer is about severity of sin. Not evidence that you did the sin. Like, let's say we know you did the sin based on witnesses either way. And there's a sin that's less stringent and a sin that we know is worse. Yeah. You can't say, since you get this punishment in the less stringent transgression, you certainly get that punishment in the more stringent transgression. Okay, it's not the Kal V'Chomer as evidence. Yeah, Joe Kahn.
Because of, like, moral relativism, that, like, I might feel a little different today that I'm telling that I'm into the farm. I mean, obviously, obviously an extreme example, but like, then I might feel okay about killing him.
Wait, is that the Noah Cast argument or a different argument?
I know more about his logic.
And what are you saying again? Is it?
More.
Well, yeah, it was, I'm not sure halacha is into moral relativism, but I'm gonna go with Noah Cast version if that's okay. Yeah, get here.
It goes on to say that the Torah, like, it needs to specify both places because, like, for like something like Karet, like it's not necessarily like so true in one case, but it could be in another case. So the Torah makes it if it is like if the Torah wants to give a punishment, then it specifies it. If it doesn't, then,
yeah. Okay, interesting. Yeah, Ellie.
I mean, as far as logical proof, though, I don't think it's very strong logical proof. Like, there are crazy kalvomers all the time, like in Gemara, that don't seem to be very intuitive or necessarily correct, and it's not a very, like, airtight way of proving it through logic.
Meaning, you're basically agreeing with the Orkest, just trying to make it stronger.
No, I'm saying that there are many instances where human logic actually, there is, like, a deductive proof that's very convincing. I think kalvomers are...
Ah, okay. I was just saying one thing, Ellie. I think, are you learning bracha?
Yeah.
Okay, you might be influenced by, like, particular sugyot and bracha. I'm not sure most kalvomers and chas are particularly outlandish. I think, like, in Bracha, there are a few odd ones.
Even if it seems intuitive, I don't think it's very, very, like, nuanced, airtight type of proof.
Okay. Okay, I think you're just enhancing the Noah Cast approach. Okay, that's fine. It's reasonable. Yeah.
If you were going to decide on what a punishment should be based on a kalvah chomer, you actually may end up with a punishment that's not severe enough.
Ah, excellent. Excellent. Those are the two major theories. Very good, obviously. Okay, two major theories. One major theory is to say we don't trust human logic when it comes to putting someone to death or giving malkov. The other theory is we trust human logic. But the fact that it's the right punishment for less severe crime does not at all prove it's the right punishment for more severe crime, because maybe the more severe crime demands a more severe punishment. So at that point, how can you use a kal vachomer? It's a very interesting theory, guys. So that's the two best ways to explain why there's a rule of ein onshin min hadin. Yes, Yoni Friedman.
What's a more severe punishment than death?
What? There are a lot of things worse than death. Can you read Harry Potter? Doesn't Dumbledore say that at some point?
Yeah.
What?
There's different types of deaths.
Okay. Yeah, please.
Do you really need the kal vachomer to suggest that the punishment for the agents of meaning who succeeded should be death?
Okay.
Wouldn't it make sense to just classify them as murderers?
Okay, interesting. You're right, except usually murder, the class case of murder, would be like a more direct way, not in such a causative fashion. It's not obvious if I set murder in motion, obviously I'm a bad person, but that I'd be defined as a rotseach, luckily, is not obvious.
So, for example, if you were to hire...
Correct. Oh, great. Well, we actually discussed that last week. Too many weren't in Shikla last week. Okay, so you're absolutely right. If you hired an assassin, the simple sock would be that he wouldn't be put to death. Okay. Yeah, and obviously you're a bad guy, but the assassin would be the murderer and not the person who hired the assassin. Okay?
So then you might actually apply that logic to this situation, that you're not the murderer, the court is the murderer, and then that gets you into such problems.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so hold up on the thought for a minute. Okay, very good. Okay, hold up on that thought. Okay, we're good, guys. Everyone okay? Okay, next. Back to the Gemara. Okay, now the Gemara there's a whole gap there. The Gemara discusses this principle in Shemin Adin, and then it says, Chai ve Malkiot Minayim. How do you know the same halakha applies to Malko? Tamar Loma, Rasha, Rasha. Rasha, Rasha is Xer Shavah, right? It says the word Rasha regarding death, it says the word Rasha regarding lashes, then you can apply one halakha to the other. But here's where things are ready to start getting exciting, guys. Okay, regarding which din did the Gemara say, Chai ve Malkiot Minai? What are some of the options? It's not so clear, right? There are a bunch of halakha that were said. Which din was it applied to? What are some of the options? What do we have earlier in this source? Is it about Kasher Zaman Velo Kasher Asa? If it's about that, then who do we have an argument against? That would be a proof against? Okay, oh, who said that? It was very good. Who whispered that? Okay, somebody besides Rav Davidol. Okay, if we would say that, it would be a proof against Rambam. Because then what would he clearly say? This principle, kasher zaman velo kasher asa, applies to Malkut, which the Rambam denies. If Chai ve Malkut Minayin was not about that particular din, then it would not be a proof against Rambam. So even just in terms of reading the Gemara, there's already a little bit of an ambiguity. Do we have a proof against Rambam or not? Okay, we're now finally going to try to satisfy the Rambam. Let's go through my three things again, guys. First, I'm going to do the source. Then we're going to look at the rationale. Let's go with the source first. Okay, so this is a famous thing. There's a Rashi that keeps quoting a Drasha, which is interesting because the Drasha never appears in Shas anywhere. What did Rashi say? How do you know there's such a rule? Because what does the Pasuk say? Kasher. Zamam. What does Zamam mean? You tried. You conspired. You wanted to do it. What does that imply? You didn't actually do it. Okay, so what's one source on the board? Kasher zaman, velo kasher asa. Excellent. Okay, in the Mishnah, that wasn't the source. What was the key word from the Mishnah's perspective? Lasot, lachiv, and what's the implication?
He's alive.
That the brother is still alive. Okay, haven't got that? So where's the source for the fact that once the victim is put to death, we don't kill the Edom Zomim? Either the words kasher zamam, or the words lasot, lachiv. Now I really shouldn't do a tangent, but I'll do it for 1 second. Because it's a famous question on this Mishnah. It's a great rashash. Okay, and here... I'm not going to tell the story. I'm just going to tell the Rishash. Okay. No, because it's like, whatever. It's like, questions like, is bragging about your son bragging or not? Okay. Mordechai, can I tell a story about your brother? Is that okay? Will you be upset? Depends which brother? Okay. Let me ask the question first. Okay. What's the Mishnah assuming? You wouldn't use the word achiv unless the guy is still alive. So if it says, kasher zaman lasot l'achiv, what does that imply? He's alive. Okay, so a lot of Rishonim say, that's not true. Read Chumash. What does it say when you do Yibam? What are you trying to do? Maintain? Shame? Lachim et shame? Achiv. So clearly you could use Lachim. Obviously in the Yibam case, he's dead. So how could you possibly claim you won't use the word Achiv unless the fellow is still alive? That's a good question, right? Can anyone tell me why the two cases might be different? Yeah, Jacob Green.
Yibam is his actual brother.
Excellent. So I was once teaching Yeshiva at Miftar many years ago, and Zachariah was sick that day, so he came to Yeshiva with me. Okay, and he said this answer, which Jacob just said, which Rasha said also, okay, which is as follows. Maybe the answer is, your blood brother, he's your brother no matter what. God forbid he dies, he's still your brother. Right, he's your brother, you're born from the same parents. How is the Pasuk using it? Lasot lachiv. It's just a stranger, he's not really your brother. So what makes him your brother? That he's part of the same community as you. The second he dies, he is no longer a chvega Jacob. That's what the Rashi says. The Rashi says that's why the Mishnah could still claim you're only a chiv when you're alive, even though in the other scenario you use the word achiv. Okay, that was just a tangential point. It is not crucial to us right now. Okay. In any case, now let's go back to Ram for a second, guys. We're not discussing the rationale. Now we're discussing the source. What would be a difference between saying the source of the idea is kasher zaman velo kasher asa, and saying the source of the idea is lasot lachiv, and if the brother's alive, then that's the case, as opposed to the case where the brother's dead. What would be the nafka mina in terms of the scope of the din? Okay, if... Yeah? Yes, exactly right. Okay, if I say... Okay, if... Okay, you have some Talmudic background?
Some, yeah.
Okay, great. Where'd you learn?
I'm
okay, terrific. Okay. Okay, so okay, I'm not going to explain that one. Okay, I guess everybody got it. Okay, if we say the source is kasher zamam below kasher asa, is there any reason to limit it to mita? Any reason? Not in the slightest. What does the pasuk say? When do you give the Edom Zomim punishment? When they conspired, when they intended, but not when it actually achieved fruition. But there's no reason to limit it, right? That's true across the board. So that would fit the Shita Mekubetzet in Baba Kama. If the argument was the pasuk implies the fellow's still around, lasot lachiv, then that argument only applies to Mita, right? Why would that impact on the case of Malchut or Mammon? So even if we get to the rationale, notice guys, even if we get to the rationale, if I just focus on the drushot, one drusha suggests one approach, a different drusha suggests a different approach. Just to show you this inside, do you go to the second page for 1 second again, guys? Go to the Radvaz, our third Egyptian scholar today. Okay, go to the Radvaz. So Radvaz is trying to make sense of the Rambam, right? The commentaries on Mishnah Torah trying to make sense of the Rambam. Look at the second line. What's the implication? We only do Eid Zomim punishment when the brother is
alive.
So exactly the svar we just said is perfect. Right? Very good. So Advaz says, if the drush is based on Achiv, that is limited to Mita. Just to show you even more convincing, guys, notice, who is the most sweeping applier of the principle? Kasher Zomim Kasher Asa? Who applied it across the board? Excellent. Shita Mekubetzet. It is not an accident. Which drasha does he quote? Gzeret HaKatavi, Dechtiv, Lasot, Velo Shekvar. It's perfect, right? He doesn't focus on the Achiv. He focused on kasher zamam lasot. If you focus on kasher zamam lasot, it would apply across the board. So we'll get to rationales in 1 second, but just based on the drasha, we can make the split between Rambam and Shittim Kubetzer. Mordechai.
The Tosfot wants to say also in Asa that's more limited.
In us.
Well,
the Riva. Correct. The Riva basically argues there's no such thing as Asa in money, right? So right. I didn't mean this is the only way to. Okay? Yeah, Moshe Klein. You want to say the same thing? Okay. Having a good time? We got it? Okay, so that's how, in theory, we could use the Drushot to divide between Tosfot and. Sorry, Shittim Kubetzer and the Rambam. Great. Now let's go to the most exciting part, the rationale. Why in the world should there be such a halakha? Why would we say if he didn't carry it out, they get punished, and if they did successfully carry out, they don't. Again, very counterintuitive. What is the logic of such a position? Okay, so let's go to the Ramban. Okay, some of you already were excited about the Ramban, and you're calling it the Rabbini Ramban. Okay, we're going to see in a second why it's the... okay, that's to be its name for the rest of Jewish history. This is the Rabbini Ramban. Okay? Let us see what we got here in the Ramban. Okay. So let's take it to, you guys tell Rabbini tonight, we quoted the Rabbini Ramban in Shir Kol Yidur. Okay, let us go to the Ramban, and we'll skip to middle of the fifth line. Aval ne'rag Ruvein, if Ruvein's put to death, nachshov shaya emet kol asher yidov rishonim. Amazing, what do we assume? If the victim was put to death? That it was true, the original Edom were telling the truth. Normally we assume they're liars, they're Edom's omen, we'll assume they're telling the truth. Ki hu bavano met. The Elu Hayat Sadiq, would he have been righteous? Lo Yazvem Hashem Biadam. God would not have led him to the fate of these evil conspirators. Kmo Shemar Katuv, Hashem Lo Yazvem Biadam, Lo Yazvem Biadam. The Ode. So first of all, it's in terms of God wouldn't let the victim suffer. Shelo Yitzin Hashem HaShoftim HaTzadikim Omnim Ufanav V'Shpok Tam Naki. Not only that, but it's both about the victim and about the judges, right? God will not allow the judges to spill innocent blood. Now, clearly, this requires, as we've talked about many times, like one of the ubiquitous right to conversations, right? A more intensive conception of divine providence, right? And a more intensive conception, God will not allow such a mistake to happen. Therefore, once it's occurred, we assume that it was the right judgment, and that's why the Edom Zomen are not punished. Jake Kaufman.
Yeah, a couple things. One, I think it's also, I think it's a very different conversation to have in the context of legal proceedings than, they've got a car that's been dead.
Oh, your femo.
Say, prescriptively, you do have cases where, innocent people go to
jail, okay.
Or you can never free them because they deserve to be in jail, and that's why they're,
Oh, it's funny, I thought you were going to go the opposite. You're telling me that it's easier svara for a car accident than a judicial ruling? You could say it. Don't let me bully you.
Yeah, there's less harmful implications if you have...
But that's... Okay. You're talking about the implications. I was just going to argue the opposite, guys. This Ramban, I admit, it definitely has an intensive conception of divine providence. That's why you guys are calling it the Rabbini Ramban. Okay? Even this Ramban, I don't think he's necessarily saying about everything in the world. Okay, if you read the Ramban carefully, what makes him convinced that divine providence is at work here? A, there's a baitin involved, and B,
death.
Right? He's not necessarily assuming that every time you stub your toe, right, God's involved in that.
Right.
Now again, he would think that, but it's not clear in the source, right? He focuses on both the baitin and shichat dam naki. So, Jake, your point's still a good point, but I think you could reverse it. You could say, no, the Ramban has a certain sense of God involvement in capital crimes and a baitin.
Right, in that way, it's also kind of not really consistent because you have. There's a famous case that there's an accidental murderer who then he should get put to death because the person who kills him, can you say the case? I don't remember exactly what it is.
There's a Gemara that says that God arranges for the Shogig murderer and the Mazid murderer to come together.
Right.
And then the Shogig murderer inadvertently kills the Mazid murderer, and then the Mazid murderer is put to death, and the Shogig murderer has to go to your
right, exactly. So by the same token, the Aiden Zomian, you could say the person who is meant to die is meant to die, fine. The Aiden Zomian are also meant to be punished. By the same token, even in that case, you're saying the person who...
Yeah, look, that gets into the problem of determinism in general.
Right.
Yeah, determinism is a tough nut to crack. That's why it's better to not be a determinist. Yeah.
Are we suggesting that the Ramban is just saying, because there's a Beit Din and because there was death, they were so sure, so Hashem had to be involved because this is such a hard case to crack usually. Exactly.
Well, I'm trying to argue the Ramban. Maybe you think I'm reading too much into it. In the Ramban's language, there's a focus on the fact that it's Beitin and that's a death penalty.
Yeah, but there's so many times where like the Ravid says like, this was an error. Like, you can say, like, there's so many, there's so much room for error in capital punishment, that how can you just say that? Like he just justifies it by saying that Hashem runs the world.
Well, first of all, don't forget one other thing, guys. Realize, okay, just to make it a little bit easier to swallow, those are struggling with Ramban, halakha makes it very difficult to ever get anybody capital punishment. So it's not as if we're giving people capital punishment left and right, right? What's the famous Mishnah in Makkah? What does it say?
Those two guys never gave it.
There was one set of Chachamim who never gave capital punishment. They'd always find a way to cancel it. Another set, there's another position that says once in 7 years, I think, and once in 70 years, right? So this Ramban is not saying like we're gonna. It's not the state of Texas here, right? We're not, you know, putting we're not putting people to death all the time. Okay, we have any Houston guys this year? Oh, yeah. Really appreciate it. You okay with that, Ronnie? Okay. Yeah, Moshe.
Well, I'm sort of with the Ramban.
Okay, Avery.
Isn't this the way we're interpreting the Ramban here a bit of a cop out? Because if we're saying, oh, you know, Hashem is directly intervening in the Beis Din, it's coming from Hashem, like, why do we need to use the Beis Din at all? It's like a conduit for Hashem to, you know, exert his justice.
Look, that's an interesting theological question, but not for us right now. Okay?
So why does the Ramban assume that all Beis Dins are inherently, like, working? Like, you have corruption of Beis Din, and you could say, like, oh, like, there seems to be a further proof of his divine providence.
Look, I think I'm trying to limit the Ramban. I mean, I think it's easier to swallow. Meaning, he'll only assume divine providence when you have two factors: A, there's a Beit Din involved; B, there's a life at stake.
You can totally take out one of the factors. There are lots of corrupt Beit Din.
Okay, I don't think the Ramban has to deny that there's corruption in the world.
Oh, but then that goes against why he's like, I guess it would.
All right, guys, let me make two more points. I'll take your comments. Moshe, I'm sorry. Let me make two more points. I'll get to your comments. Now, notice what we have now. We have another way to justify Rambam. So I'm going to turn the page again, go to Kesa Mishnah. Look at the Kesa Mishnah, the second found Kesa Mishnah, guys. Odi Yish Lomar. You haven't seen the three lines from the end? Odi Yish Lomar Tamachia, Shemachia, Kim Yitzah, Badat Kel, Yulei Shayachayim Zemita, Loya Minia Kajbach, Shetov and Nefeshach from Yisrael. Notice again, which argument is he following? The rationale of Rambam. Here's the key five words. I hope you guys got here. Masha ein lomer kain. The Malkot. So the Kesset, Rav Yosef Karo agrees with my reading. How does he read this Ramban idea? Or at least he says this kind of reading. He doesn't quote Ramban. It would not apply to Malkot. There wouldn't be the assumption God must have raised in Malkot. He limits the idea to death. So now we have two justifications for Rambam. We can either base it on the Makar. If the Makar is Lasot Lachiv, that's limited to death penalty crimes. We can base it on the rationale. If it's Ramban type rationale, that is limited to death and not to Malkot. Haven't got that so far? Okay, for those of you who are interested in Jewish thoughts here, this actually connects to larger themes in Ramban versus the Sefer HaChinuch. See if anyone remembers this. You'll make my day. Okay, we've discussed rabbinic authority. Why do you listen to the rabbis? If you remember, there's a debate, Ramban and Chinuch express it differently. If he asks Ramban, why does the rabbi, remember what he says? Ramban says, we assume Hashem is guiding the process, their psak will be correct. What did the Chinuch say? He says, okay, they might be getting it wrong, but we need a system, and this is the best bet. Right? But he's not assuming that God is going to arrange for their psak to be correct. So in a sense, the Ramban is consistent in the theory of Ramban, and Chinuch will be on the other side. Okay, Maishi, what are you going to say before? Okay, see, I waited long enough that he forgot. Daly.
I guess the Ram didn't occur to me before, but the Ramban's perspective makes sense to kind of understand perhaps why people were killed in a seemingly unjust case. But it doesn't seem to follow that that's a reason why not to punish the like the Eight Atonement. Because even in the concept of like Tanakh, like look like
I see. That's clever. Jake, I understand your question. That's a very good question. Ever catch what Jake and Ellie are asking? They're saying let's say you have a more deterministic worldview, but we still think that criminals are supposed to be punished for... you know what? I think I have the answer to your question. Okay, let me clarify what Jake and Ellie's questions. I'll try to answer it. That's an excellent question. Let's say you have a more deterministic worldview, but we still think you punish criminals. But if you have a more deterministic worldview, you should say, when someone chose to shoot somebody, that was also God's will. So how can we punish murderers? So just like we punish murderers, we should punish Adam Zoman. That's an excellent question, Jake and Ellie. Can anyone tell me what the Ramban would answer? I actually don't think he has an answer. Why? They want to say, even if you have the deterministic worldview, so what? But when you did the crime, you did the crime. Isaac Saltz.
I was just going to say, you don't have to be the one that kills him.
No, but why? They want to know why is the Eitz Zomim different than the Rotzech? Mort.
If we're discussing God's will, it's okay with children to tell us that God's will is different.
What do you mean before that God's will is different?
If we're discussing God's will, and the Torah tells us that God wants us to live without Eitz Zomim, then that should be enough for us.
That's too clever. It was a better answer. Yeah, Yoni.
According to the Ramban, why do we need Evie for
Well, well, isn't that Evie's question? We should just put our hands up in the air and say, God, you take care of the whole world.
No, just use my intuition. Why do I need any, like...
Why does it fall from the Ramban? Okay, because we're guaranteed to get it right? Yeah, so you know, this all gets back to that guy's always better not to be determinist. But no, the Ramban would say, when you put in your effort, then it works out. So, I mean, even according to the more deterministic worldview, you're supposed to put in the effort, right? Yeah, Yitzi.
I want to answer that. We don't believe Zomim because they insist that they were
after that. Ah, Yitzi Shbeir, that is exactly right. Excellent. The Ramban is not only saying that God wanted the victim to die. What's he saying? We assume that the original testimony was true. That's part of the assumption here. In which case, the Eitz Zomim are not Eitz Zomim. You're right. You know, it's explicitly. Where's the line?
The
Kesef
Mishnah.
Is that Kesef Mishnah explicitly? Where is it? There it is, yes. Very good, you see. Nachshov she'amed kol she'idlo rishonim. I mean, here the providential arm is going one step further. Not that victim X deserved to die and God arranged it. That the Adam were telling the truth. That's the assumption. You can still question why we're assuming that. But that totally changes the perspective.
How does that work?
Okay, there's another thing lurking here. You know, guys, there's too many good issues here. One second. There's too many good issues here for one year goalie. It should have been like a three-part series. Okay. Give me that. You should be like the last Hobbit movie. Just go on forever. Okay, what do I want to say? There's another issue looking at Eitz Zomim, which is, it's not obvious in every case of Eitz Zomim why we assume that the Eitz Zomim are liars. What's the classic Eitz Zomim scenario? Two people say, we saw this crime. What happens now? Two other people come and say,
you were with us.
So there's a line running through Shas where the Shas will say sometimes, wait, isn't it Trey Utre? Isn't it simply a scenario of two versus two? So the other, I alluded to this before, the two famous questions about Eitz Zomim is, why do we have this rule, kasher zanam velo kasher asah? And why do we believe the second pair, shouldn't it just be a stalemate of two against two? There's a lot of answers to that question I'm not going to get into right now, but I think lurking here, Jake, is, what's the Ramban thinking? It already was like a chiddush that we believe the last two in Eitz Zomim scenario. So if you could just somehow have one factor that shifts things slightly, we no longer believe the last two. Maybe we'll decide to believe the first two. And at that point, it is different than your murder parallel. Okay, Yitzi, very good, very good. Ben.
Well, but also, I mean, if it's a stalemate, then we would err on the side of not being punished.
Look, it's a famous question of Eitz Zomim. I don't get it right now. Okay, it's really worth it if it's own cheer. Okay, if you want, I'll give you some more sources about that. Why we believe the second group. Yeah.
Doesn't the Kesef Mishnah just state that they, like, the difference between like the Zomim and the Rotzeach is that they stated the fact, which is what the Ramban also says, but also with like with the difference between a case of like them trying to give out Makov, they directly influence that. Whereas like they weren't lying about the first case.
They weren't lying about the first case.
Of they weren't lying about killing. They were lying, I guess, about, or they were trying, like they were just stating a fact that they weren't necessarily allowed to do because they weren't technically there.
You know what? You're okay? Can I leave your side? Sorry. Guys, I'm sorry, because I didn't get your question before.
I think that we can interpret the Ramban's word like in a different way. As
yeah.
opposed to saying like that each like God find like each decision, maybe like the ultimate picture is like a better, like God like wants good, like ultimately. Like if someone like good, like a child dies, you can just bring the same argument, but like you can just say the ultimate good is better.
Okay, you know what? I do like to mix Lumdus and theology, guys, but I'm going to stop here, though, because then we'll get a theological tangent we'll never get back to this year. Okay? We'll discuss theology more another day. Okay, next, guys. Let's just throw in two more rationales, okay? Guys, I'll take comments in 5 minutes. Okay? We'll do it outside. We have one rationale on the board, the Ramban, the Rabbini, heavy providence rationale. Okay? What are the Pnei Yeshua's other two rationales, guys? What else did the Pnei Yeshua say? Okay, what's his first approach to the Pnei Yeshua? Maybe the Kal V'Chomer breaks down because, like, Ein Onshin Min HaDin. What's the point? If you actually put someone to death, you deserve a worse punishment. I mean, if we caught you in time, you deserve death. If we didn't catch you in time, we think you deserve something worse. Okay, that's his first svara. What's the Pnei Yeshua's second svara?
That it's not effective to just be killing everybody.
Ah, very good. That was very well said. Nofi, excellent. Okay, guys, one of the great things about coming back as a guest is you can do everything. You can violate the dress code, the haircut code. You can't beat it. Okay, no VX.
Wearing pants.
Okay, that's good. That is a plus. Okay, and socks. No, you're not supposed to know today. Okay, so in any case, he said it very nicely. Now, I very much like how Nofi said it, because it sounds a little bit like Pnei Shul, like it's about the kavod of the Beit Din. What would that mean? We don't want to shame Beit Din, and if they put the victim to death and the winner to death, it's just embarrassing. So someone might be bothered, like, is that really so important? But I would say a little bit further, it's not just about embarrassing select individuals. It's about what message does Beit Din have for society. Think about a case. What if someone says, oh, you know what Beit Din did in this case? They killed everybody. They killed this side and that side. Like, what's that saying? Oh, we love killing criminals. And just, no, we'll kill everybody in the case. We'll kill both sides of the debate. But that would be a problematic educational message. So I would take the Gnai Beit Din even in a deeper sense. It's not just about, like, X and Y being embarrassed. It's about, what is a Beit Din about? Is a Beit Din quick to put people to death? Could Beit Din put everybody to death in case? Once we put one side to death, we just can't put the other side to death, right? It's just too much for Beit Din to be that kind of court. Now, give me 1 second, Ben. If you go with that second svara, let's go back to Rambam again. What might someone say? In theory, we're not willing to put everybody to death in a case. But, yeah, if we give everybody malkot, maybe, it wouldn't be the same thing. It could debate the point. But in theory, that would be another svara for Rambam. So we're doing great, guys. We already have 3 different svaras for Rambam. You could base it on Lasot Lachiv. You could base it on a Ramban type theory. You could base it on a Pnei Yeshua type theory. Okay, let me do one more thing and I'll take comments. Okay, let us go to the last 2 sources. Okay, the Gvur Ari. Gvur Ari is the same author as the Shagat Aryeh and the Troy Evan, a man named Aryeh Ginsberg. He has something really clever. Really clever. Okay, again, what did the Rambam say? That in the case of Malkot, even if we lashed the first witnesses, sorry, we lashed the defendant, we would still give lashes to the end zone. He is a huge Kiddush Y. Look at the 3rd line. Notice, sounds like the Shita Mekubetz, right? Kasher zama lo kasher asa, and that in theory should apply even in Malkot. Afiluachi lokin mishum lav delo taneh. What a chiddush! There are 2 different reasons to punish witnesses who lie. What are the 2 reasons? Asitim lo kasher zamam asot lachiv. What's the other reason? Everybody who lies in court is violating a prohibition called lo tanev reyacha ein shaker. Now here you have to think for a second, guys. This is very clever. Normally, when you have a lo tase and the Torah does not tell you the explicit punishment, what's the default punishment? Malchut. When does that not apply? Anyone know? Why do you get Malchut every time you talk Lashon Hara? Excellent. Okay, who said that? Very good, Isaac Saltz. Okay, there's a rule called the Lav She'en Bo Maaseh. That default that you get lashes is only if it's an active violation. If it's a thought, an emotion, a verbalization, you don't get Malchut. So now, normally, when a witness testifies, why do we give him Malchut on the low Taneh principle? Why do we normally give Malchut because of low Taneh? Because it's a Lav She'en Bo Maaseh. Okay, now comes the real Kiddush. Says the Gvur Ari. The lavs are shaychlev mizomet el mishum davi lav shein b'maseh dein lokin lav k'damini b'rosh pirkin v'hani milei b'shalon haseh maseh al piyam v'don ilkan idon avokol eicha shen naseh maseh al piyam shen ilkan idon avokol demazun naseh memela v'losti b'dam filochi lokin. This is really big, interesting Kiddush. What does he want to claim?
It's not really a lav shein.
If we catch the Edom Zomim in time, it's a lav shein b'maseh. All they did was verbalize. If we gave the victim Malkot, in a sense, it was a maaseh. True, it's a little bit of chiddush, because they didn't actually do an action, but their verbalization led to an action. So dafka, in that case, they would get malkot qua la, the prohibition of lo tenes. So you guys ready to get really lumdus? Chad, this is for you. Okay, man who loves lumdus, and Yitzi Shapiro. Okay, well, Yitzi is more brisker, despite his weird kippah today. Okay. Okay. I mean, maybe it's like a chumrah, like in the shear of a kippah. Okay, okay. Okay, it's good brisker chumrah. Okay, if your keep is not like a soup bowl, you're not Yotze. Okay, so, okay, let's go backwards then, guys. Okay, there could be 2 cases of lashes in Adam Zoman, which is a different principle that's being mechayev you. Let's say Adam Zoman tried to give an innocent victim lashes, and we catch them in time. Why did they get lashes? Which pasuk is giving them lashes? Vasitim lo. According to verse 3, if we catch them too late, they also get lashes. Which pasuk is giving them lashes now? Lotana v'yachachakar. And notice each one would not apply in the opposite scenario. Lotana would not apply if we didn't carry out the sentence because lav shebo maaseh. And kasher zamam would not apply if we carried out the sentence because v'lo kasher asa. So that is another, a fourth, in a very creative way. Take a problem. One more second, guys. Okay? And I'll take comments. We now have four solutions for Rambam. And there's a very interesting point that emerges from the quarter. You'll get to in a second. What does the Rambam say? Even if we gave lashes already to the victim, we'll still give lashes to the Adam's omen. So all four solutions, guys. If you go with a pasuk solution like the Radvaz, what's the basis of that? Because the drasha of lasot lachiv is only about mita. If you go with a rationale type solution like the Kesef Mishnah, what could you say? Well, the Ramban theory maybe only applies. Maybe the Ramban problem theory only applies to death. Or maybe the Pnei Yeshua covered Beitin theory only applies to death. You have a fourth theory, according to the Gvur Ari. Kasher Zemamlo, Kasher Zemam does apply to Malko. It's just that you still get Malko anyway, but based on a different track. Not based on Kasher Zemam, but based on? Lo Taneh. Excellent. Now, my son Mordechai made an excellent point about this Gvur Ari. Mords? Do you want to tell you?
If we say that it is hanging out, yes, Malko is actually not only in Markov, but also in Mita.
Correct. Understand what you just said? If the Gvur Ari is right, in theory that should happen, even if Adam Zoman testify that someone should be killed, and we do kill them. Right? What should we say once again? We should give them Malka now based on they violate La Lo Tana V'Chakar in a massive fashion. He's absolutely right about that. That's an excellent point. Okay, now comments. Yeah, Elisha.
So actually, that came up when we were talking about Gvur Ari. I don't know if this makes sense, but it's possible resolution for that. Issue.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't there a concept that if you are chaya for two punishments and one is more severe,
yes,
you're only
yes,
worth your punishment? So I guess this is not quite a parallel, but what I'm saying is that since they, on a certain level, are actually chaya for more severe punishment, they don't get the...
It's like somehow, once you're like in the mita category, we can't think about the malkut anymore.
Yeah.
That's very good. Very interesting. Yeah, Yitzi.
I think the point that a lot of people are, like a lot of the sources are missing, including especially the Pnei Yeshua, which is that why do we give them the punishment? Because the pasuk says, "Behind each arim, each movie, a roloy sikulasa b'davar haraz b'kirdaka." So, like, pragmatically speaking, you should do unto them so that everyone will see.
Okay. Okay, excellent. So I'm not going to get to right now, guys, but you can see it. You can really just write a whole book about this topic. Okay, another thing lurking here is philosophy of punishment in Judaism. Okay, the famous question, is punishment retribution or is punishment deterrence? Just give you a little food for thought. There are four places in the Torah where the Torah says, we give them a punishment and the Chol Yisrael, Yishmu V'Yirov, Lo Yisidunot, something like that. What does that seem to indicate?
Deterrence.
So, but here's the million-dollar question. Should I take those four as reflective of the norm? I mean, punishment Judaism are deterrence. Or should I say, no, it says in those four places because there it's deterrence. Maybe normally it's retributive. Okay, so that's a very interesting topic we're not discussing right now. If anyone's looking for good food for thought, good for Torah, check out what the four plays are and see if you can come up with a theory. Why are there four plays where the Torah says, Chol Yisrael, Yishmu V'Yirov? Yeah, Moshe.
In order to kill someone, you have to give them a warning first, right?
Yes, yes.
So I think another proof of the Rambam could be the fact is, like, you can't put an Eid Zobi to death just because of the fact that you didn't warn him before.
Except for one thing, Maji, you're raising a very good question. Hatra does not apply in the normal way to Eid Zobi. Okay, why is a much more complex question. You're right, like, almost every case in Halacha, you have to warn the person before you can give them a punishment. I don't get to it right now, but it's not clear that applies to Eid Zobi. Okay? Yeah, Max.
I was just going to respond to that. I feel like you could see Gatra because, like, obviously you don't know they're needed zoning before they testify. You can't give them.
Right. Money. It's interesting, but does Hatra not apply practically? Does it not apply conceptually? I don't get into it right now, but it's not obvious that Hatra applies state zoning. Yeah, yeah, Kier.
Bruce Ari, you said that the second source was that from the Lotan net.
Yeah.
But can you also apply the Lasot Le'achiv because from Mako because he's still alive when he's getting mocked.
No, it wasn't that exactly the, who was it? Radvaz's far, no? That's the Radvaz's far.
Yeah, but it's still...
No, but then you could use Kasher Zamam. You don't have to use Lotaneh at that point. The Radvaz is, from a Kasher Zamam principle, we give him Malko.
You do... Well, yeah, but you try to give him Malko, it's not necessarily certain that you ended up giving him Malko.
No, but again, as long as you say it's about Lachiv, you're saying the original Drasha is only about Mita, not about Malko. Okay. The Gvur Ari is saying it is about Malko, but you're getting Malko for a different reason. Nimr.
I thought the Pnei Yeshua was actually trying to be nice to the Edim Zomi because it says that we don't put them to death by baiting because they will not mechaper for them, while if you let them live and Hashem kills them in the end, then it will be kapara for them. So it's like kind of trying to fix them in the end also. So that's how
trying to fix who?
They didn't know that they will still have some kind of kapara before they, when they die.
And how do we do that?
I thought that's what Blake meant.
In all the other cases. You know what? I'm going to we'll discuss right after. Okay, last comment here, guys. Okay, now we go to the Barakola. Who wrote the Barakola? The Maral. I don't know what it is, what the Barakola is. Yeah, Ben Sion. Yes, very good. It is a 7-part defense of Chazal. He deals with 7 criticism of Chazal. Chazal, why do you read Pesukim in a weird way? What gives you right to make takanot? So any curse about all these issues of rabbinic authority, right, approach to Chazal, you should all learn Baragola. Very, very interesting sefer. Okay, so one of the Baragola's chapter is about difficult halachot. And obviously there's a good halacha to discuss. What about this principle, kasher zamam, below kasher zamam? So here's a theory I find fascinating. I know that Imre and Eli do not like it, but I think it's a great theory. Okay, what does he want to say? He said, what's the whole construct of I'll do it outside because we're running out of timer. What's the whole construct of Eid Zomim about? So, what do we really like in life, guys? We like when someone is, here's an example, when someone's doing something wrong and it comes back to rebound upon them. Right, you know, let's say the guy is like being really ridiculous trash talker in the basketball court. Like really just outrageous. They say he's the greatest all the time. Now what does he do? He goes up and, you know, misses the layup. Right, so we're really happy, right? Because here, the person got their comeuppance right away. Okay, or someone, what would we like? What would we like to happen in life? Right, a mugger holds up someone in an alley and somehow he shoots himself. Right, that's the way life should be. Right, when the evil that's trying to do other people, rebound themselves. Okay, where do you have this in a great biblical story? What does he refer to? You can't beat Purim. What happens in Purim? Haman prepares a tree for Mordechai, and lo and behold, he's hung on the tree. Right, you can't. When life works out like that, you just love it. Right, you can't beat it. Okay. You guys okay if I do one humorous thing? Okay, before lunch. Okay, there's a great movie scene like this. Okay, even though you shouldn't watch Woody Allen movies because he's not a nice guy, but there's a great scene like this. Okay, Woody Allen's online for a movie, and they're discussing a guy named Marshall McLuhan, right, the father of media studies. So Woody Allen makes a comment about McLuhan, about what he thinks McLuhan means, and the guy behind him taps him and says, "You don't know what you're talking about." So Alan says, like, why should I listen to you? So the guy says, well, actually, I'm a professor at New York University, and I teach a course in Marshall McLuhan. So Alan basically has to give in, because you're supposed to give in to authority, right? So then Alan turns to the camera and says, wouldn't it be great if the following happened? So the guy behind the professor taps him, and the professor says, what's going on? And the guy says, you don't know what you're talking about. And the professor says, well, I teach, you know, a course in Marshall McLuhan, NYU. And the other guy says, yeah, but I'm Marshall McLuhan. Right? I don't know whoever let you teach a course. You don't understand the word I wrote. Okay, so we like it when life turns out like that, right? The person who's being a braggart has it come upon them. Okay, what would happen, though? Let's go back to the Purim story. Haman makes a tree for Mordechai, and he's hung on it. What would happen if Haman made a tree for Mordechai, and Mordechai was hung on it? It's true, there'd be something satisfying about hanging Haman on it, but it wouldn't have the same satisfaction. Right? At that point, it's just vengeance, not the sense of this is the way life was meant to be. Right? The Maral would like to argue, what's Eid Zomim about? Eid Zomim is about creating that Haman experience. Right? Isn't it great when life works out that way, when the person's trying to hurt somebody, the only person they hurt is themselves. Once we put the person to death, we can't create that anymore. Now again, it could be the person still deserves punishment on other grounds. But what a zomim is trying to create, that depends on catching the person in time. Because that is one last interesting theory about the a zomim rationale. I'll take the last comments. Yeah?
Aren't you only allowed to learn a lot from the Chumash? Not only
well, which, I think he, very good, Mashiach. I think he's only using the Haman story as like an image to convey his idea. It's not the source's idea. It's just an illustration. Mort?
Can I suggest a still discussion
there?
Yeah. Could we have a Haman Beit Harakha in this way specifically to fight Mitzvokin? To do everything oppositely to what Mitzvokin?
Okay, look, so it does come up in the Gemara there a little bit. Like Yehuda ben Tabai, Shimon ben Shattah, who did it? Which one did it? Which one did something just to be Hotzim Liban Shal Tzdukim? Shimon Shetah. Shimon Shetah made a psak just to prove that Tzdukim wrong. But I think Mordechai is critical of him. So yeah, you have to work out like to what degree you want to push that theme. Okay, last comment, Moshe.
Yeah, It's actually interesting. You actually could use the Dirac Mala to answer Charlotte and Jake's question on the Ramban about why we don't punish, about punishing the other person because of the Dabar Shabbat.
Okay, I hear you say much about it. It's okay. Maybe I'm biased. I like my answer better. Okay? All right, guys. Just remember, guys, 1:30, Yehuda Rothner, 3 o'clock, Shana Bet, Rav Yair, 3:30, everybody, Shana Rav Yair. Everybody have a great day.